Hello, gang. How we doing? It's time for part two of your podcast with Rich Cadden, and I think it could be even better than part one. I think we'd settled down a bit. Sounds weird, but I think that we'd gotten comfortable speaking to each other over the first part, and then the second part was even better, and we got into even more stuff. We talked a lot about the mental side of coaching and combat sports, and how that it's almost the same as the way things work in life outside of sport, and how all these things translate over and how they're all related. And I think it was a really cool conversation. I really enjoyed the second part, listening back to it. I don't know what else to tell you about it. I hope you guys like it. Oh, I had a whole spiel. I have to apologize that the podcast yesterday, it went a bit under the radar for most of the day, because, well, I'll let you in on a little secret, was that I have was on a weekend away last weekend, got home late Sunday night, had car problems with my girlfriend's car, which delayed us getting home. I work shifts, so I was on working early Monday. Tuesday I had the live performance at Spin, and then after that, I had a few drinks on Tuesday night, and Wednesday I woke up feeling absolutely horrendous. The event went on a bit later than I expected, but it was a great event, and well done to everyone involved with that. But yesterday I was not in a good way. I forgot that the combination of alcohol, a late night, and an early morning is a lethal one, even for someone probably who doesn't have anxiety, and for someone who does and is already exhausted before they go into that evening, it's just going to be absolutely catastrophic. And then I made the vital error that I've told people not to make before, and that was try to counteract my exhaustion with high amounts of diet energy drinks, and it was just an absolute stew of unsuccess. Is that a word? It was horrible. And then I had work, and then I had a course, and it just wasn't good. And then by the time all that was done, I just had to go to my bed. I'm not gonna lie to you. In the middle of the afternoon, I was completely broken, and then I woke up and ate a pot noodle and went and did some exercise to try and sweat out the rest of the angst and the anxiety that had built up. Yeah, so that's me. I just thought I'd confess that even someone who talks about and thinks about mental health as much as me, still haven't got it down at all. Still prone to making the same mistakes, but overall, I think I'm doing better. So, yeah, it was just a little, I don't know, a little spiel about if you find yourself taking a step back once in a while, trying to beat yourself up about it, because I think everyone does it. Everyone regresses and does things they know they shouldn't. I think it's part of being human to make mistakes. And I think we talk about that in this podcast, actually. That wasn't pre-planned to link that in like that. But we do, we certainly do talk about making mistakes both in sport and in life, and how it's about how you react to that that's important, and not about necessarily about what you've done. So that's a nice little intro there. Fuck me, this is the most cohesive I've been in ages, and I've spoiled it all by ruining it. I've spoiled it all by revealing that it wasn't planned. But yeah, enjoy the much like this podcast, which was very impromptu as well. But a massive thanks to Rich, and I hope you enjoy the second part. Cheers. Quickly move tables because we're fast becoming entertainment for the other guests at the hotel. But yeah, we're talking about psychology side of things, yeah, and how that's improved your ability as a coach.
Yeah. So now it's like you start picking up more involved with the not only the language that people use, but their body language, mm-hmm. their physiology. I mean, some of the PT clients that I've had today and yesterday, being able to see them absorb information and then get into this like almost over analytical mode and see them kind of second guessing everything that they're doing and stuff like that. Because I now know how more, well, I don't know how the brain works, but I know more about kind of performance coaching and stuff like that. You're able to recognise when people are overanalyzing things, when they're having a lot of kind of internal dialogue, things that are holding them back, and when they're having things that are holding them back, you broach it, you speak to them, you have that level of awareness, you have this level of closeness, and the coaching relationship is sacred. As we were just saying about the Raquel Pennington fight.
Yeah.
When you've got that level of closeness with your fighters, with your clients and stuff like that, you can really connect. You see when people are having like an inner dilemma, they're having an inner turmoil, they're over analyzing things, and they're not, when they're getting too tense in their movement.
Mm-hmm.
You start having this conversation. And you're just saying, look, this, I can see the inner dialogue going on. I can stop talking to yourself that way. it's like people berate themselves after making a mistake, and you see them going, like muttering under the breath, like fucking hell.
Yeah.
Like whispering, they're whispering, but they're talking to themselves.
Yeah.
If I talk to them the way that they talk to themselves, I wouldn't get any clients.
Yeah.
If like a lot of people's like inner dialogue is brutal, it's so harsh, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And sometimes it gets kind of overcompensated. It takes a certain level of rationality to come in and say, don't talk to yourself so hard, you're doing really well. There's a certain level of encouragement that's required. It's good that you're recognizing that there's a problem, but you're putting too much energy into the mistake. You need to put the energy into the successful things that you've done. You've done it right 3 times, you've done it wrong once, and you're berating yourself over that one thing that you've done wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see people have this like rewire. You see them like kind of question it and then accept it, and then they go, right, okay. And then they give themselves a little pat on the back when they do it right.
Yep.
And then they give themselves another pat on the back when they do it right. And then they give themselves another pat on the back when they do it right. And then the fourth one, they do it wrong, and they go, okay, I know how to learn.
Yeah.
And so it changes the dynamic, it changes the energy. And then when what that does, it allows people to learn in a quicker, faster, more effective way.
Yeah, because as soon as you start making mistakes and start telling yourself you can't do something, you're not going to get it. If you keep telling yourself, you're not going
to get it. Exactly. Whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, you're right on both accounts.
Yep.
It's a question of confidence, and having that confidence, that's pivotal.
Yeah. I remember I did an interview with one of the guys from the combat center we were just speaking about combat sports, and I was just starting back up doing them, and he was talking to me and he said to me, it's all about confidence. And I said, oh, I don't know. He just like looked at me at dead night, so I shrugged his shoulders, like, I've just told you it's all about confidence, and you're just sitting there down yourself. It's like, listen to what I'm saying.
Yeah. But that internal model, that internal dialogue that people have, is crushing.
Mm-hmm.
It can really be a serious barrier to success.
Mm-hmm.
So, those of you that are listening, see if you can recognise the way that you're talking to yourself.
Yep.
See if you can recognise the way that you're talking to yourself, and then the bigger impact of that on the bigger scale. This is it. This is like the first step in moving in the right direction. So learning not to be so harsh on yourself. Learning to go, reward yourself when you do it a little bit right. This is why they have pass marks in exams.
Yeah.
You get 70% of the stuff right. Well done.
Yeah.
Have you done a degree?
No.
Okay, so in a degree, the pass mark, the bare minimum pass mark is 40%.
Okay.
You can get 60% of the shit wrong.
Yeah, and you still
pass. And still pass. Okay, granted, with a 2-2, but hey, it is what it is. If your heart surgeon or your airline pilot had got 60% of the shit wrong, would you want him operating on you? No. Would you want to get on that plane? Probably not. But this is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's a level of acceptance that you make mistakes, a level of acceptance that you can deal with the mistakes when they happen, and then ride through it and walk through it in it with almost a brazen attitude and go, fuck it, I made mistakes, so what? I'm still here, I'm still doing it, and you haven't broken me.
Do you work with people outside of combat sports to do
So I've done work with race car drivers, darts players, bodybuilders, worked with a few guys from the UFC. I've done stuff with fears, phobias, stress, anxiety, all that kind of stuff. So this is like, people still feel these feelings, whether they're sports people or whether you're just doing your normal everyday job.
Yeah.
People still go through these things. It just so happens that with combat sports, the consequence for making a mistake means that it becomes pain-centered learning.
Yeah.
You end up getting punched if you get it wrong. You end up getting kicked if you get it wrong. It means that you end up learning a little bit quicker, maybe, for some of people. but then the thing is, in like everyday life, that punishment for making a mistake doesn't happen that quickly.
Yeah.
So that all the same emotions, all the same feelings are still there. The stress, anxiety, and that kind of thing. It happens, but it's just a different game.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that anxiety outside of, like, I mean, I've had anxiety probably since I was very young and not understood what it was.
Okay.
And coming into combat sports, like, I think it's helped a lot.
Yeah.
But I just recognise, like, the same way what you were speaking about there, with like, if I do something right 3 times and do it wrong once, like, I think I translate almost like throughout my whole life. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've like in inner monologues as well, like constantly berating myself.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
combat sports has, through doing them and having people tell me, you know, don't beat yourself up.
Yeah.
Just improve. I think that has helped my anxiety outside of sports.
Yeah, definitely. Massively. Definitely. I mean, there's one of the guys that trains with me in jiu-jitsu. There's loads of people doing stuff with the military, post-traumatic stress disorder and stuff like that. There's a jiu-jitsu one called World to Recovery. There's the reorg ones from, I think that's in the Royal Marines. There are people to speak to, whether it's in the in the services, or I mean, even in everyday life, there are people to talk to out there, and these people can help.
Mm-hmm. Just a couple more questions before I let you go. So, as I said to you earlier, tomorrow is my my first Thai inner club.
Yeah.
But just this a question I've always asked someone like yourself is just, what would you say to someone going into their first fight or their first inner club? How to approach it?
Okay, so first fight and first inner club are two different sets.
Okay.
Two different questions. So the first one, we'll deal with the intercom first, because that's what you're really asking.
Yeah.
So first in the club, don't overthink it. It's glorified sparring.
Yeah.
Don't put yourself under pressure. There's no winner. There's no loser. It is what it is. Okay. You're in big gloves. There's a referee there to stop it if it gets too leery. So in this kind of a scenario, what tends to happen is that both people can come in and be the same weight. One might be like superbly athletic and the other person maybe not. If the athletic person is just laying a beating down, then neither person is getting anything out of it.
Yep.
And so the referee will step in, is what it is. If it's on the, if it's the other way around, and you're the person beating the other person up, give them a bit of space.
Yeah.
What are you there for? You're there to learn. You're there to learn. There's no winner. There's no loser. So what's the point in laying a beating down on someone? Encourage them. Touch gloves. Have a play.
Yeah.
And see it. It literally is a game. Be aware that these people might not bring the same game attitude. Yeah. They might be seeing it as a fight, so it might start off being intense. But if you can control distance, use your jab, use your push kick and control the pace of the fight there, then you get to deal with someone that is being a little bit more aggressive. If you wanna match that level of aggression and you can hold your own, then the ref and it's even. The referee will probably let it go because you're both getting pushed to your limits. It is stressful. There is a crowd watching. You have got someone that's trying to do you damage. But at the end of the day, you're there to learn, and there's the safety of it, that if it starts getting too bad, then it'll get stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So on the back of that, you're then going in saying, right, okay, how can I impose my game plan? How can I use my strategy? What's my intent? Am I going to be boxing him? Am I going to be kicking him? Am I going to fight on the front foot? Am I going to fight on the back foot? Is he a clinch fight? Am I going to close that distance down and just clinch him?
Mm-hmm.
Understanding what works for you and working out what your strengths are is the pivot. Now, because it's your first interclub, you're not the complete rounded fighter that you want to be just yet.
Yeah.
But you'll have a strength. I like to call it, like for my kids at age, I'd say everyone's got a superpower. It's working out what your superpower is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You don't see Spider-Man trying to fly like Superman, yeah. So Spider-Man has it as his special skill, yeah. spinning his webs out. Spin your webs and do your thing, yeah. If you're Superman and you want to fly, you fly, yeah. It's also for caution. Yeah. Work out what your strength is and stick with your strength, and then when you triple down on your strengths and focus on your strengths, you can start riding out the weaknesses in your game.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can work on your weaknesses when you're in the gym. When you're making it a kind of pseudo competition, like an interclub, it's kind of like a fight, but not.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no winner and loser. So focus on your strengths and try and establish your style. That's what I'd say for people going into their first interclub. People for the first fight, then it's fucking warfare. Okay. You're going in there to win.
Yeah.
So basically if you're going in there, like I was saying about this mentality of it being a fight. In Scotland, yeah, we're in the West. There's going to be ego. There's going to be bravado. There's going to be a good guy and a bad guy. Yeah, you don't need to worry yourself on that. That's everybody else's issue. For your first fight, you're getting in there and you're going, right, okay, what do I want to do? Right, because I want to win. I'm going to focus on my strengths and I'm going to enforce my game plan and impose my game plan to the best of my ability.
Mm-hmm.
Taking the least amount of risk possible, so then if I do get caught, I know how to defend, I know how to survive. Then this is how we can then start taking forwards. So, and then this is where the relationship of a coach and a fighter becomes important. You have to learn to listen. Listen will be a big part of like learning to fight under pressure in the interclub. can you listen to your corner? Can you respond to your corner? In the fight, you should be well practiced in that, learning not to turn away and switch around and turn to him and go, "What'd you say?" Yeah, you're looking at the guy that's trying to hit you.
Yeah.
So you staying focused on him, listening, taking the advice on board, and then they know whether you're listening, whether you do as they say. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't do it, they'll keep on saying it until that message goes in, and then this is where the communication models go back to, or the language that we use in order to coach. There'll be kind of key trigger words when I'm coaching my guys, I'll have like trigger words or strategies or ideas and concepts that I can say one word and it means a whole game plan.
Yeah.
So working with that mentality, you have to understand what your strengths are, focus on your strengths and win with your strengths. And then as you get more experience, you learn to push up your weaknesses and cover your weaknesses.
Cool.
So yeah, there's the two answers.
Yeah, no, I'm glad.
Yeah.
I like how you knew exactly what I was asking really before.
Yeah.
So just, I think earlier today as well, before the seminar, you mentioned, I think you said you fought in front of 100,000 people in Thai.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask, what was your personal highlight of your career in Thai boxing?
Only one.
or highlights, if you like.
Yeah. So, there's been a lot. Some of those, like, training with some of the Thai guys that I've trained with.
Mm-hmm.
My first time going into Jitty Gym. Winning my first title in the UK at Monaco Ballroom in Wigan against a guy called Darren Collins. Fighting at Leeds Town Hall the multiple times at Leeds Town Hall. Like every single one of those fights was an absolute banger.
Yeah, I went to a gig there. That's a lovely room.
Like. Yeah. Fighting when I lived over in Thailand and lived that lifestyle of the like a full time fighter out in Thailand, training 6 hours a day, 3 hours a morning, 3 hours on a night. That was the very best shape I've been in. I mean like even now, if I clench my fist and pinch the skin on my forearm like this,
mm-hmm.
that's what my abs were like. I was just ripped to shreds. It was absolutely insane. I fought at 61 kilos, and it was on the day weighing. I was tall. I was lean. I was in the best shape of my life, and it's the best I've ever felt. Fighting on losing my world titles. That I fought for about 6 world titles. Lost 4, won 2. Got stopped on cuts on a couple of them.
Yeah.
Losing by cuts is a ball acre, because the fire and the passion is still there inside of you. The willingness to fight is still there inside of you. But the referee or the doctor calls it.
I asked Liam about that, and he said, "Oh, I've only actually been stopped once for cuts."
Yeah.
Sounds like you've been pretty lucky.
Yeah. I've had over 130 stitches in my head from elbows. I think John Wimpar's kicking my ass on that one here. I think he's like on 270 or something. But yeah, everything around, like cuts around the eyes and on the eyelids and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You're like gaping wounds and like an extra eyebrow, like having a gash above your eye that you can like fit your little finger in. It's heartbreaking. But the fire and the passion's still there. So it's a highlight, but it's an emotional journey. I like the fighting on the King's birthday, fighting in Cambodia, fighting cameo rules. So some of those were absolutely amazing. getting kind of escorted off planes when I went to Cambodia and ushered down the diplomatic lines by TV companies and as I walked out the airport, seeing like a 20-foot picture of myself and like as you're coming out of the airport, like the national praise it was getting, it was next level.
Mm-hmm.
You're made to feel like a total rock star.
Shame the
pay's not the same. But yeah, it's been a wicked journey. And it continues. I retired like 7 years ago now. I still get my buzz from being in the fights and being in the arena. I've had a couple of MMA fights, but now working with ACB and working with Bama and UFC and stuff like that, you're in the back, you're in the changing rooms, you're seeing the fighters. The training, the preparation, the communication that they have. I get a litmus test on my like coaching strategies and protocols, being able to compare them at the elite level. And the comfort in knowing that we're doing the right thing. Seeing the explosiveness of some of the kind of high level guys, like it becomes like goal setting. To be honest, getting made redundant in 2008 is the best thing that's happened in my life.
Is that when you went to open the gym and go as a coach?
Got made redundant in May 2008. I think it was this year. I look back and it's like the 10-year anniversary. 10-year anniversary in Rome. I've done quite a lot in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, opened up the gym, opened up like 3 companies, got married, had 2 kids. It's been an amazing journey. I've been on that. I mean, to be honest, like, you can never look back and have any regrets, but what you can do is look back and say, I wasn't fulfilling my potential.
Mm-hmm.
My passion was always with combat sports. It was always there. Even when I wasn't getting paid for it, it just is what it is. But certainly, the being forced to make a decision, asking myself those brutal questions of whether I want to continue and going down that kind of like unexamined life, like Socrates said, like the unexamined life, just kind of sat on the treadmill, running through the rat race and all that business. Yeah, okay, it's nice having money in your pocket and you can do some nice things, but is it killing you inside? And for me, like I was saying, I'm an all-in kind of guy.
Yeah.
And like being forced to make that decision, I had that decision taken away from me. And when I got made redundant, my exact words when I got made redundant, I put on my Facebook, it's only when we have nothing that we're free to do anything.
Yeah.
So, and this is where it started. It started with, I was still running my classes down at Local Fitness First. I was doing personal training, I was doing mind coaching. I made myself, it freed up a lot of time.
Yeah.
I put myself in a good situation through having the engineering job, but it wasn't my lifeline. It wasn't my true passion. What it was an education into saying this is what you need to do. This gives you more structure around what you're doing. If you can do that with an engineering system, you can do it with a physiological system.
Yep.
And this is why I structure the my training and everything that I do now the way that I do.
Yeah. Do you think you would have made that decision to go sort of full time with your other endeavours and leave the engineering behind, or do you think you would
probably
have
not?
No,
probably not, because it was comfortable.
Yep.
It was comfortable. It was easy. I was in a ridiculously well paid job. I mean, like 10 years ago, I was on like 50 grand a year.
Mm-hmm.
I was the technical counsel to the managing director at one of the biggest railway companies in the UK. My job was to check the decisions that the managing director and the board were trying to make sure that they weren't contravening railway law.
Mm-hmm.
So like making sure that they covered all the group standards and made sure that they abided by the legislation, and basically kept their asses out of jail. That was my job. In doing that, I was also part of the mergers and acquisition team.
Mm-hmm.
I used to get flown all over the UK in a helicopter to visit sites and be like, again, the technical counsel and asset management manager when we're looking at taking over companies and stuff like that. It was pretty rock and roll.
Yeah.
They had a load of money. They used to throw money at problems, and it's maybe why they went down the pan. they ended up broke, but it wasn't through lack of trying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, go back to looking at UFC. The guy that owned the UFC before it really took off, it was like 56 million in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
It was 56 million pounds in the red, and then he chucked another 10 million in.
So I think it was that 10 million was to fund Ultimate Fighter, wasn't it?
And that's how it then started to gain traction and got the acceptance, and it is what it is. So there's business acumen, there's decision making, you start seeing how different people have been kind of triggered into doing stuff that they didn't understand, or maybe they did understand. You never know, but it's a risky business, and the UFC thing paid off.
Yeah.
For the railway thing, it didn't. I mean, it's business, but there's no emotional content there. It's a facts and figures thing. It's like I was saying, it's bordering on autistic. You start seeing what's right, what's wrong. There's no value judgments over it, and I think this is like business mindset that I've taken, and not getting emotionally involved. I feel is a benefit as a coach, because I don't follow people on their emotional ride, on their emotional roller coaster. I say, right, that's right, that's wrong. And talk as flatly as that. There's no value judgment over it. I don't think, oh, you're doing it wrong, so you must be a knobhead. It's not that at all. It's just, that's right, that's wrong. What you need to do is this, this, and this. If you do it, then happy days. Then you'll get better results. It allows me to be truly helpful, not berate.
Yeah.
And I think some of the time people can get kind of sucked into that, and some people take my candidness sometimes a bit brutally, sometimes a bit take it a little bit too far, but I don't mean any offence by it. I'm just calling it how I see it and trying to help out the best that I can. There's no value judgments there.
So last question, but I'm going to make it a double-barreled one since I had so much fun with that one before. So what would you say to anyone who is interested in getting involved with Muay Thai, and also what would you say to anyone who is interested in getting involved with mind coaching or going down that sort of line, but maybe to improve their own mental health?
Okay, so start off with the Muay Thai. Muay Thai, do your research. Do your research, find out that there's a lot of high-level gyms throughout the country, every city, and there's always people that have got a lot of experience. What you don't want to do is get sucked into like social media hype. people can start pulling the wool over your eyes with maybe bigger, fancier gyms. Like they might. I mean, Bad Company's not that big,
no.
But it's probably one of the best in the UK.
Yeah.
If you do your research, you'll know that. You'll see they've got a lot of high level guys and the quality is top standard. Like in York, we're the best Muay Thai gym in York.
Mm-hmm.
It is what it is. You just call it how you see it. The facts are there, and the credibility is there. So yeah, do your research. When you're going through this, what you might find is that there might be a few options. So like finding out what gym works for you. There's a certain vibe. So like certainly in Bangkok, I kind of fortunately came across Savarupin Gym and Jitty,
mm-hmm.
And connected with him there. I mean, Thailand's an amazing place with some fantastic trainers and some really nice people. It's the land of smiles. It's amazing. I love it over there.
Mm-hmm.
I could have gone into another gym, maybe half a mile down the road, and had the same experience and got the same opportunities. The quality of training is next level. But loyalty is important. Loyalty is important because then that's when you build a longer lasting relationship. I sent Jitty birthday cards.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, yes, okay, I've spent a lot of time over there and had a lot of training out there, but do your research and spend your time like finding the vibe for the gym. If you've got a problem, speak to people. Yeah, don't just go, well, I don't like it there, okay? Because you might be basing that opinion on one person, yeah? You might be based on one relationship, or you might have a fallout with one person and it becomes an issue. Talk to the coach. Talk to people about it, mm-hmm. Yeah? There's nothing to be scared of. Don't see it as a bad thing. And this is, again, because it's a double-barreled question, speaking out about problems, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Speak out about problems because people are more receptive to problems than you probably currently think.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people go through stuff and they experience similar things. They just choose not to share it on the big screen on social media and stuff like that. They might go through it. They might have been through it themselves. You never know. So yeah. Find out the gym, do your research, go to the highest quality gym that you can find. If there's two or three, go in and see how you feel. Yeah, trust your gut instinct, and then you'll find the one that's right for you.
Mm-hmm.
People get involved in mind coaching stuff. From that perspective, a lot of people that get involved in sort of mental health and personal development type work, like hypnotherapy, like NLP stuff, I think the current figures around sort of 97% of people that do these kind of self-help courses,
yep,
don't do anything with it, and they just do it for their own benefit anyway. Some of the things with NLP are about modelling excellence. So a lot of the stuff that was talked about, I've now added more value to my own personal experience. I didn't realise what I was doing. Everything just kind of clicked,
mm-hmm.
and I was really stubborn, and so I never quit. So I just kept on going. When I got involved on that side of things, it was like, right, okay, if that's what the issue is, I'm just going to work through it. putting that into the mind coaching side of things, because it just clicked straight away. I was modelling excellence straight away. It was easy to learn, and I got the benefit from it. So I then look to pass this idea on and help people out wherever I can with the kind of nerve, stress, anxiety and like performance factors, understanding how like different psychological states can be triggered and worked with, and allow people to kind of fall into this kind of flow state. I talk about flow state on the podcast as well. There's like a 4-stage sequence that goes through. The two work very closely hand in hand. It's good to get rid of the negative shit that holds you back, but then what's the void that's left? You need to have a structure of what that void has left.
Mm-hmm.
How you should be thinking about things, as opposed to how you shouldn't be thinking about things. Okay, good. You've got rid of all those doubts, all those insecurities. Right, okay. Now what are you left with? There's a void left.
Yeah.
So yeah, what you have to do is understand, get rid of the shit that's holding you back. But now we've got a structure of how you want to be thinking and how you want to be processing this information. So then you can go through it.
Perfect. Well, cheers, Rich, for giving up your time and
no problem.
Speaking to me.
Yeah,
much appreciated.
It's been awesome.
Cheers.
It's been awesome.
I'm sorry about that intro, but I hope getting through that intro was worth it for the rest of the podcast, which I'm sure it was. Just to mention that Rich has his own podcast, so if you've enjoyed his input on this one, there's loads more. I think he's got about 15 episodes out now on a podcast just called Chalk D Academy, I think it's called. And you can find that on an app called the Anchor app, which I didn't know about, but Rich told me about, and it sounds really cool. I think he talks about it in part one, actually, where he says within 30 minutes of having this app, he was podcasting. So if you're looking to do your own podcast, you know, maybe just yourself or whatever, I'd recommend, and you're not sure, like, you don't have the money to invest or the time to invest in loads of editing, you maybe just want to share a bit of content and see people respond to it or whatever first. This Anchor app sounds pretty cool. I think I maybe would have given it a go if I'd known about it when I started. So I think you just download it. You just record through the app, just talking on your phone as if you're on a phone conversation, and then it bounces that way, and you could just release it. The only downside, I think, I'm not looking into it too much, is you can only release it through the Anchor app, and you have to pay additional money or something to get it onto like iTunes, etc. But like I say, for if you're just starting out and you just want to see how it's going to go or see whether you are going to enjoy podcasting, I think it sounds like a really cool idea. I mean, I should probably like contact them about sponsoring me or something, the way that I'm speaking about them, but you know, just when Rich told me about it wasn't something I was aware of, and I thought it was cool. I'll stop boring you all now. I'm going to try and put out one next week that is non-combat sports related, so if you've been enjoying these combat sports ones, apologies. If you have been but you want something a bit different, then you're in luck. There's probably going to be quite a few combat sports ones coming up, if all goes to plan, but I hope you guys are enjoying them. I'll maybe do some more round tables. I have a couple of people coming on who aren't combat sports people, so I'll try and mix up as much as I can. Sometimes these things, there's going to be scheduling issues. I've got a little bit of a plan in my head at the moment that I can't talk about in lead up to certain events, etc. But I'm really rambling today, but yeah, feel free to get in touch and let me know what you thought of these combat sports podcast, because it was a direction I was really interested in going in. I just hope that people are enjoying it as much as I am enjoying doing it, and that I'm getting a good mix out there, and that everyone's all bases are covered, hopefully. Right, I'm gonna go because I've warbled loads, but please go check out Rich's podcast if you enjoyed it, if you enjoyed this, or go and check out my time in general if you've enjoyed this. It's ace. Right, cheers.